Welcome to the Writer's Market Podcast, which is focused on helping writers find more success with their writing. I'm your co-host, Robert Lee Brewer.
And I'm your co-host, Brian A. Clems.
Together, we're Robert and Brian, and this is our show.
The Writer's Market Podcast is hosted by writersmarket.com and the Writer's Digest Writing Community, a division of F&W, a content and e-commerce company.
Let's see what's on tap today. Okay, so welcome to another show, the Writer's Market Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be talking to Debbie Ridpath-Owe, who's a popular children's book author and illustrator. And she's also, before she became an illustrator and author, she's someone that both Brian and I have worked with previously.
Yeah, I've been working with her on and off for a number of years. I met her, it's probably 10 years ago now, online. She was starting to get known as a good freelance option. And I was working on Writer's Digest, and we had these additional magazines that came out every year. They were annual magazines. One was called the Writer's Yearbook, and it focused on publishing markets and that kind of thing. And I was introduced to Debbie and assigned her this piece that would look at the publishing industry and break down the changes over the course of the year. And she did an excellent job the first year. So, of course, I would have her back for the next several years. And she was wonderful to work with, very diligent, always hit deadlines, always delivered on what I needed and what I asked. And so I was always so sad when she started becoming famous with her illustrations and having great success there. I was very happy for her, but sad because I knew she had less time to help me out on those freelance things.
Yeah, I know. I definitely felt the same way when I can remember the day when she sent me an email to let me know that she was going to quit doing work for writersmarket.com. She had collected these like 3 to 5 pieces of publishing news each day for the writersmarket.com website called Market Watch. She sent me this email to let me know that she was going to be leaving, even though the pay was great and the work was great, because she had gotten to that point where she was ready to go out and be a freelancer and illustrator, author for children's books. And I thought it was great. I thought it was awesome. And I was very sad about it because Debbie is the type of person, I can't wait to talk to her. It's going to be the first time that I've heard her voice in person. But she's one of those people where she can send an email and it sounds very enthusiastic and
that's so true.
Just filled with personality just through the email. So like there are a few people that can pull that off, and she's one of those people. So I am very excited to talk to her and learn more about what's been going on with her illustrating and authoring for children's books. But Debbie is just a great person, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it in the interview. But she's also, fun fact, the person who first got me on Facebook. And I have her to credit for that. Yeah, so it's really cool.
Credit, we blame her.
I guess I can blame her for that. But, it all started with Debbie, great person, and I can't wait to talk to her. So let's talk to Debbie. But first, let's listen to a new installment of Three Things. Welcome to Three Things, the part of the Writer's Market podcast that takes a look at three specific things writers need to do to find more success with their writing. In this installment, we'll focus on blogging, specifically what I call the three C's of blogging. The first C of blogging is content. A blog without content isn't really a blog. In other words, there's no reason to visit your blog if it doesn't offer content. So pick a general topic to cover that offers you plenty of options to generate new blog posts, whether you're blogging about parenting, sports, or politics. The second C of blogging is consistency. I usually advise new bloggers to aim for one new blog post per week to get started, and to publish that one post at the same time on the same day of the week. This helps set expectations for your audience on when to expect new blog posts, which is key along with excellent content and getting return visitors. The third C of blogging is community. I've developed several effective blogs with strong audiences over the years, and I consider community building the key component of each one. Encourage comments on your blog and respond immediately to comments when they do appear. A blog with a healthy number of comments is a blog with a healthy community. Eventually, you'll be able to kick it up a notch by focusing on SEO, analytics, and the latest developments in search algorithms. But if you stick to these three C's of blogging when getting started, you'll be ahead of the game in creating a blog that people enjoy reading and sharing with others. Until next time, keep writing and marketing what you write. Okay, we have Debbie Redpath Owe here with us today. Debbie writes and illustrates books for young people in Toronto, Canada. Her first solo picture book, Where Are My Books, debuted from Simon & Schuster Books for Young Readers in 2015. Debbie's illustrations appear in picture books Naked and I'm Bored by Michael Ian Black, as well as Judy Bloom chapter book and middle grade reissues from Athenium. Her illustrations also appear in the upcoming Mitzi Tulane picture book series by Lauren McLaughlin for Random House, the Ruby Rose picture book series by Rob Sanders for HarperCollins, and Sea Monkey and Bob by Aaron Reynolds for Simon & Schuster. Learn more at her blog for writers and illustrators, inkygirl.com, and on Twitter at inkyelbows. Welcome to the show, Debbie.
Hi, nice to be here.
Hi, Debbie.
So that's like a really busy list of projects for this. And I know that you've left some off, watching your Facebook feed and stuff. So I guess my first question is, when do you sleep? Or maybe even a better question is, do you sleep?
Well, it's interesting because whenever people, ask me, how do you find time for all this? I am actually in awe of any of you authors and illustrators who have kids or also work in an office and manage to keep writing and illustrating. So I have no children and I do this full time. So I'm actually in awe of any of you parents out there.
Yeah, well, that's
me and Brian know about that. But that's kind of interesting, cool too, because you do such a great job illustrating, all of these children's books. So,
thank you.
Like, if you don't have kids, but your illustrations are so good and certainly speak to kids and adults, how are you able to find that? Like, have you done research? How do you seem to get that? What strikes a chord with kids and adults?
Oh, that's a really great question. I think part of it is because I'm a child at heart. And I also, even though we don't have kids ourselves, we're quite close to our nephews and nieces. And also, I love kids. And plus, I like talking to kids. I was recently doing a Skype visit with a school, and one of the questions that came up with from the kids was, what's one of your favorite parts of being a children's book writer and illustrator? And I know it sounds kind of corny, but it's so true. I really love talking to the kids, either in person or via Skype, whatever. And the reason is because, as you guys know, in our business, sometimes things get really angsty and I get really like, oh, am I going to hand this in on time? Or is my work really up to snuff or whatever? But then I kind of remember, okay, in the end, those young readers are going to be looking at my illustrations and sometimes writing. And how cool is that? And that really helps motivates me. Helps motivate me, and if things are going a little bit crazy on this end, just remembering that helps calm things out and puts things in priority.
Yeah, I gotta think that's so exciting to
Oh, it is.
Meet these readers who get so excited. I know, with my kids, they read these books, and then they they're ready to go draw their own books and do things.
How old are your kids?
I've got a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah. Well, I've got some older ones too, but they're past the picture book.
You're never too old for picture books.
Yeah, well, I know that. I read them myself.
I know. I get looks when I'm in airports reading on board and naked, and I don't have my kids with me.
I've got some tweenagers and teenagers, you know, that are, you know, quote unquote too cool right now to do certain things.
Well, I have a question to kind of back things up a little bit. How did you get started into writing and illustrating and that kind of thing? Because that wasn't your background, correct?
That's right. I actually began my educational background is in computer science. And my first my first career was a computer programmer analyst. I worked for a financial institution in Toronto. So I graduated with a degree in computer science, and I worked as a programmer analyst for 2 years. And then I really love programming because there are, you know, I'm not sure if either of you have any programming experience, but part of programming is really creative, and that's the part that really appealed to me. But I found that since I was on sort of the management track, that as time passed, I was doing less and less creative stuff and more management stuff. And I admire people that totally embrace the whole management track, but that really wasn't me. And I was less and less happy. And my husband noticed how unhappy I was. And he suggested that I quit. He said he'd support me. I owe him so much. he said he'd support me so I could pursue my creative dreams. And so it was hard. It was hard making that decision. So I quit and I pursued, as I was working on my novels, for middle grade, I taught piano. I did a little bit of freelancer. I would pretty much, you know, take on, I worked in a library and, a children's bookstore. Anything that could help me get a little bit of experience and some income while I was pursuing novels. And then, I have an agent, a wonderful agent, Curtis Brown. We sent out two novels. Both of them got close, but, you know, being, no matter how close you get, in the end, they were still rejections. And, I was getting kind of, is this, you know, it's going to happen, but when? And then I went to, I know what happened. I began to realize that I needed to start meeting people. Like, a lot of people don't realize that I'm actually quite an introvert. So even doing this podcast is quite a challenge for me. But I used to think, if I work really hard at home on my craft, and, you know, eventually my manuscript will hit the right person at the right time. And while that may happen with some people, it wasn't happening for me. And so I realized I need to get out and start meeting people. And a friend of mine, Lee Wardlaw, she told me about the SCBWI, which is Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. So I thought, you know, I need to start attending those conferences. And I went and I began submitting my manuscripts for my middle grade novels for critiquing. And one year I went, I was all excited. Of course, in my head, I'm thinking, okay, you know, I'm going to mail it in for critique. And the editor who receives it, she's going to be so in love with my middle grade novel that she's not even going to wait to critique me. She's going to call me up and say, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I end up getting a call, but it wasn't from an editor. It was from the head office of Squibby, saying they had to reject my manuscript. And unfortunately, they had to turn it down because it had illustrations. And I thought, oh, you know, here I can't even pay to be rejected. So I was all depressed and everything. And then a friend of mine and my sister encouraged me to enter the portfolio showcase. And I thought, no, you're crazy. I can't drive nor are training. But they convinced me it was okay. My friend helped me put together my first portfolio. I entered it in 2010. And I ended up winning two awards. And one was the Mentorship Award. And one was not the top award, but one of the two runners-up. And on that panel of judges was an editor from Simon Schuster, a publisher, who ended up offering me a contract to illustrate Michael Ian Black's new picture book, I'm Bored. And that, I just was so blown away. And that's how I got into the children's book illustration part of things.
Well, that's great. And Robert and I should note up front that before you were famous, as you are now, you know, we worked with you for a number of years. You've been writing pieces for us for, you know, the market books and for the Writer's Digest magazine. And we've been lucky to know you. So we're very
thank you.
I was very excited when you started getting these gigs. And that's pretty exciting to be working with a celebrity, and Michael Lehman Black, you know, you're one of my favorite people. He's one of my favorite comedians. What was it like, that experience, since this was kind of your first involvement as Simon & Schuster picked you up or contracted you to do this, and you were also working with somebody who was reasonably well known? What was that like?
It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. I'm a fan of Michael Ian Black's, and I also so appreciate that he had a chance to choose a well-known illustrator or somebody else, but he actually liked my illustrations. He liked how minimalist they were. And this is where I have to say something about so-called celebrity books, because I know that there are a lot of people out there who think that, you know, as soon as they hear the phrase, you know, oh, it's a celebrity book, they immediately assume it's poorly written. Well, I have to say that Michael, I love Michael's writing. I've read his memoir, his other longer pieces. I love illustrating his picture books. I have told Michael that I would kill to illustrate anything else that he wrote. So before you dismiss, you know, a celebrity picture book or novel, whatever, try to give them a chance. So that's just my little insertion. Because also I so appreciate the chance, because I believe that some celebrity books give lesser known illustrators a chance. There was no way that they could have, you know, they could have hooked me up with someone who wasn't known, because I had no experience as an illustrator or a children's book writer. But because I was able to be part of a project with a well-known author, that enabled Simon & Schuster to introduce me to people.
And I think that's important to note that for our listeners out there, that it is possible, as you know, if you're working hard towards your goals and you continue to put yourself out there, whether that's go to conferences, whether that's get involved in competitions, you never know who will be there and who will link you up for your first real assignment and or your first publication, and you don't even know who that will link up with. I will also note that I love the illustrations. My kids are big fans of the book. Mine are young. Mine are 8, you know, 7 and 5. And they love it. In fact, my 5-year-old, who can't read words yet, or almost 5-year-old, can't read words yet, she sits in the bathroom and has Naked. She loves reading Naked over and over because we've read it so much. And it cracks me up. And to your point about the celebrity books, I think in particular, and I've read a lot of them, that specifically comedians and celebrities who also are writers on shows and that kind of stuff, they tend to really, really put out some good work because yes. That's what they focus on, words and everything like that. So to your point, I think you're right. I don't think you should necessarily dismiss all celebrities. I think there are a handful that maybe wouldn't be my cup of tea. But for the most
no,
part,
I agree.
Yeah, but for the most part, I think that's really great. So what was the process like with the, you know, the Simon & Schuster editors and the working back and forth?
For I'm Bored, I'll use I'm Bored as an example. That was my first picture book. What happened, my editor emailed me the manuscript for my consideration. Of course, I said yes, because I loved it right away. And it had no pagination. It was just the text. It had maybe one or two art notes, but mostly they wanted to see how I would interpret it. And of course, I was completely inexperienced at illustrating picture books, so I kind of looked at it. Oh, and this is actually a really important note for aspiring picture book writers. I think it's really great. I really appreciated the freedom that the publisher and the writer gave me, not giving lots of art notes. So anyway, I read over the manuscript, and they asked me to try to split things up into, you know, 32 pages. I think it ended up being 40 pages. So I read over the text. I tried to, I made a lot of sketches how I saw each picture book spread. I made lots and lots of sketches, read over the manuscript a lot. And then when I thought I had it sort of sorted out, I would do larger sketches, and then I sent those in to my art director and editor at Simon Schuster, and they looked it over, and so all these sketches were quite rough, you know, sort of in pencil, that sort of thing, and I also started fine-tuning the character. The main character of a picture book is always really important. And again, I so appreciated that the author and the publisher gave me lots of freedom in terms of what the main character looked like. I have, you know, since then I've critiqued some picture book manuscripts, and the author puts, and the main character should be this and this, and they, you know, freckles and you know, three feet, 5 inches high or something like that. And that is not how you do a picture book manuscript. And so anyway, and so after that, you know, we did a lot of back and forth. They would critique my illustrations, what was working, what wasn't working. And I remember the first time I handed in the sketches, we had a phone meeting, and partway through the phone call I went, oh my gosh, they hate my illustrations, they're gonna fire me. And I was so stressed. But what was happening, I realized what appealed to my editor in my portfolio was how sketchy and loose my illustrations were. And because it was my first picture book, I was sort of tightening up and trying to be all perfect and getting the perspective right and everything. And they said, we kind of want you to loosen up again and sort of, you know, try to be yourself and not so perfect. And that's something I really learned. And so we went, I think the whole process took, I'm sorry, in the U.S. you say process, right?
Process is fine.
Yeah, it's fine by me. We translated just fine, so we're in good shape here.
The whole process, I think, was about a year. I can't remember, in terms of the illustrations, because and they gave me a lot of freedom in experimenting and everything. And then finally, we settled on the final art. Near the end of the final art was when we started thinking about cover ideas, and my art director, Laurent Lin, came up with some great ideas. He just wanted to have the, you know, the I'm bored as the main title, and just have a picture of a little bored girl leaning on the letters. And then I got my my printer proofs, so excited. And then, you know, a few months later, appeared in bookstores, and I freaked out, of course.
Yeah, of course. As anyone would for their first book, and as I have, and I'm sure as Brian did. But you know, that one of the things I take from that that was so kind of cool is, like, I think a lot of times people don't realize how much of a role illustrators play as far as storytelling, which, you know, is one of the cool things about them not giving you specific directions, is that you're, you know, I've always heard directors talk about this, that they're telling stories, even though they're not the script writers and stuff, they're thinking about everything in a kind of cinematic way, you know, of telling the story. And have you found that being like the process with not only I'm Bored, but these other books that you've illustrated?
Yes. And I love that. That's, in terms of the whole process, that's actually my favorite part, trying to think how I will help enhance a writer's picture book text. And the more freedom I have, the more enjoyment I get of the process. I think at this point in my career, if a picture book manuscript came my way, you know, and the publisher asked me to illustrate it, if it had too many art notes or they tried to be too, you know, micromanagey, I would probably say no. Because for me, a lot of the enjoyment I get about from illustration is enhancing the text, like adding something to the picture book story. And that's something I've been learning. I'm still learning. I still feel like a newbie. So I have... Because I think when I was a writer only, I used to think years ago that a picture book illustrator, his or her job was to illustrate what was in the text, and that was it. But now I'm realizing an illustrator does so much more. Yes, they illustrate what's in the text, but not exactly what's in the text. As an illustrator, I want to enhance what's in the writing. I want to add a little. I think my whole focus is on the reader experience. I don't want, if the text can stand on its own, I don't think it should be a picture book. I think a picture book relies heavily on the illustration. and I'm rambling. I could ramble on about the illustration aspect for
no,
so long.
This is great.
I enjoy it so much. And I enjoy illustrating other people's books as much as I illustrate my own texts as well.
And I know Michael Ian Black really enjoys it because I saw that you've got a new book under contract.
I know! I'm so excited. I hope I didn't yell too loud, but I am so excited. Yes, it's a sequel to I'm Bored called I'm Sad. And Michael actually, he emailed me a while back saying he had written sequel to I'm, this is before the contract happened, so we weren't sure if it was going to happen or not, that he had written a sequel to I'm Bored called I'm Sad and would I please be his illustrator. And I just wrote back in all caps and tons of exclamations. I have told him, I've met Michael once in person when we were promoting Naked. And he is so nice. He's really, really nice. And I said, I just was really upfront. I thought, should I be subtle? No, don't be subtle. I said, I would kill to illustrate anything you write because I love your picture book writing. And so that's why I was so thrilled when I found out that I'm Sad was going to officially be coming a picture book, which comes out from Simon & Schuster and I'm looking at my board. I think 2018 is a tentative publication date. And I haven't received the final edited manuscript yet, but I will soon because I know I will soon because the final art is supposed to be handed in later this year.
Wow. And that's something else people should note is, you know, this we're chatting here now in 2016 and you're talking about a book that won't come out till 2018, which shows how many steps and how long the process can be to get a book out that's just right. I know you guys will do it just right. Like I said, you guys make such a great team. The illustrations are wonderful. The stories are wonderful. And and I really enjoy it. So that kind of leads into my next question is you have this experience of illustrating other people's work. How is that different? Because you're a writer too. How is that different from illustrating your own writing? Are there different challenges that go along with that?
It's an interesting question because I mainly illustrate other people's picture books until, you know, my first picture book, which is Where Are My Books, by the way. let's see, I'm trying to think. When I'm I think in the first part of the creative process, there is a contrast because in the beginning, if it's my own text, I know I could take a lot more liberties into changing things. And I can always ask too to change the text as well. But if I'm illustrating someone else's books, I want to make sure in my mind, I'm always aware. I want the author to be happy with this. So it's more interpreting what I think the author wanted with the, you know, his or her text. And how I can enhance it. But I like the challenge. I always like the challenge. And also, with my own texts, I could paginate. I think I can change things a lot more easily. But partway through, once I have this initial rough sketches and the layouts approved, at that point, it's pretty much exactly the same because you can only change so much. And then I just focus on the illustrations.
Yeah. Now, I think it's really cool to be like paired up with like, you know, this celebrity for the first book. But then like you moved on to illustrating the Judy Blume chapter books. And that had to have been like, you know, a big blowing type of. What was
exploded.
That process like?
My head exploded. It was pretty amazing. And what happened was, it was a couple years ago, and it was right before in Toronto there was a major ice storm. And I remember on December 19th, my editor at Simon Schuster, his name is Justin Chanda, and he called, he emailed me and he asked if I was willing to audition for a book project of potentially great proportions. And he used that term. And I thought it was the 9th of December, and it meant I would have to work through the holidays. But I was intrigued enough, and I said, yeah, sure. And so he said, okay, I'll call you tomorrow. Oh, yeah, and just as an aside, when you were growing up, did you ever read an author named Judy Blume? And I wrote back again, oh, my God, like screaming in capitals, exclamation marks. And so he and I exchanged, I think every, you know, I don't, he worked all the way through the Christmas holidays as well, because he and I were exchanging emails and sketches and comments pretty much every – I went through my emails every day through the holidays, including New Year's. You know, he gave me advice and stuff like that. And afterward, I handed everything in. After a couple of weeks, you know – mid-January, I was still waiting. You know, I kept moving on to other projects, but I was waiting to hear if, you know, I was hired or not. And then I got a phone call, and it was area code 212. And oh, please, please! And I picked it up, and he told me. And I think he only got a few words out, and I started screaming. I just oh my! And I can't remember. Because I don't know if you can tell, but I'm pretty excitable, right? But anyway, I can't remember exactly what I responded with, but at some point I remember him saying, yes, this is really happening. And so I must have freaked out, and I called my husband and everything. So, and I remember when – I remember the first time that Ms. Bloom tweeted at me, like, you know, saying how much she was enjoying my illustrators. I'm looking at it right now, but I printed out that tweet. I have it up on my message board, and I remember texting my husband, Judy Bloom tweeted me. I was so excited. And then the books came out, and I was just like, there is my name in a Judy Bloom book, and I'm a huge fangirl. In fact, I met her once in person. I remember telling my it was at an SCBWI convention, and I remember telling my editor, oh, I really want to meet her, please, please, please. And so he promised he'd try, but I know that she was only there for a short time. And so I promised him, you know, no, I'm a fangirl. I'm going to be so professional. No worries. You know, I'll be cool. And then when I meet her, I burst into tears. So I just like, oh, that's so embarrassing. But she was so gracious, so nice. She put her hand on my arm. She says, how's the conference going? You know, even though she was tired and everything, she was so, so nice. And then afterward, I found out that my emotional reaction was actually pretty common for some women my age who grew up on her work. So, but that was, it was such an amazing experience in answer to your question.
Yeah, well, you know, those connections from when you're young and growing up and meeting the people who were involved in your favorite books, you know, it is kind of amazing. And it's kind of crazy to think that years down the road, kids like mine and Robert's will grow up with your books feeling that way about, you know, with On Board and Naked and everything.
You're going to have them all crying on you.
And I'll have them all crying. They'll go through the period, you know, in high school where they don't think we're cool. And then they're adults and we'll say, we know her. And then we'll be cool again. So, you know, you've landed these other deals. You landed the Judy Bloom books. And then how did it work for the other books, like the upcoming Ruby Rose and the – is it Mitzi Tulane with their authors? Did they reach out to you? Did your agent reach out to you? How did that work?
For Ruby Rose came first. Okay. With HarperCollins, and I think for the Ruby Rose, my agent told me about this great opportunity that that HarperCollins was looking for an illustrator for the Ruby Rose picture books. And again, there was an audition process. And so I sent my agents through, I sent my, some sample illustrations and a rough proposed character sketch of Ruby Rose through my agent at Curtis Brown. And then I was so excited to find out that I had been chosen. So I was so, so thrilled about that. And I've been actually emailing with Rob Sanders, the author, and we're very, very excited about the first Ruby Rose a picture book coming out next month, actually. I'm not sure if it's going to be next month when this podcast comes out. But anyway, so for Random House, actually the editor who had picked me, who was at HarperCollins, left HarperCollins and went to Random House. Her name's Maria Monduno, and she still wanted to work with me. So she approached me again to illustrate Lauren McLaughlin's wonderful picture book series, Mitzi Tulane Preschool Detective. And that's how I became involved in that picture book series.
Yeah, it's got to be so cool and affirming to have people approaching you now to do different projects.
I know. I'm so not used to this because, you know, I went through many, many years of being rejected. It's almost like I was a big crowded room, you know, saying, notice me, my hand upraised, and no one was noticing. But now that my foot's in the door, it's really, and so that's, if I could tell my younger writer self, a piece of advice, it would be that it just takes one good break, the right person to notice you at the right time. Actually, my friend Maureen McGowan, who's an author, she has a really great analogy. It's called the lightning rod analogy. And she compares publishing industry success to being hit by lightning. While you can't control when lightning will hit, you can improve your own personal lightning rod. And that's such great advice. And then my friend Kevin Sylvester, he also points out that's true. But in addition to that, you have to be ready when lightning hits. And those two pieces of advice are so important and would have helped me if I remembered them early on.
That's a great takeaway, and I think that's absolutely true. One of the things I've learned over time is that everybody should be working hard on their craft and getting better at what they do always, and reading, you know, the things they like to write, but also putting yourself in a good position for that lightning to strike. I talk to a lot of people who go to writers' conferences, and they meet people who at the moment may not even pay off, but down the road provide a pivotal, you know, turning point in their career, even at that moment. Or like you with going to SCBWI conferences and then entering the competition. I mean, that started to be a break for you that transitioned you into this wonderful career you developed. And so I try to tell writers all the time that taking those steps and networking, like you said, and I know you said you're an introvert and Robert's an introvert. I'm an extrovert, so it's a little easier for me. So we're a nice balance. But
absolutely. It's so important. Could I just say one more thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Though? Because it is – I find that so important. And expanding on that, I also have found perseverance is as important as talent, and part of that perseverance is trying to develop a thick skin. Because, and that's why I'm actually grateful, in a weird, twisted way, for those early rejections. Because what I'm finding is that, early on, I thought, once I get my first contract, I'm all set. Everything's great. But even after you're published, you are still going to experience like negative reviews. If you audition for something or you're sending in a manuscript, you are still going to experience rejections. So early rejections are really useful, as long as you could survive through them. But perseverance is so important. And also what you said, networking too, because again, I used to have this negative, you know, even the word networking, oh, it's like schmoozing, it's, you know, using people. That is not networking. And that's something else I would have told my younger unpublished self. Networking is about establishing meaningful relationships with people who, you know, people you like. And it could be enjoyable. And, even if you can't afford to go to these conferences, there's a lot of online ways you can network, meet people. You could seek out your local children's book author or illustrator, organizations in Canada, for example. Canscape is an excellent organization for writers and illustrators. There are so many ways to meet other people, even if you're an introvert. You can get over that. One more thing. I know I'm rambling, but this is so exciting for me. Okay, if you are an introvert, I strongly recommend you read, the author is Susan McCain, and the book is called Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. And I first found out about her book through a TED Talk. And she makes many great points. But one is that even if you're an introvert, you could pretend to be an extrovert for short periods of time if you want to achieve a goal that's important to you. And just hearing that really helped me as well, because you could be an introvert but still enjoy almost enjoy networking and, you know, meeting people. Because for me, I actually like, I think I'm an introvert with some, I've learned some extrovert qualities. I'm not sure if either of you like that. But I actually like hanging out with people and talking to people in the industry. But after, you know, a really hectic convention, I'll just crash. Yeah. I won't want to talk to anybody. My husband knows I'm going to be ignoring him. You know, I love going back into hermit mode. But even if you're an introvert, there is, you can learn to network and be out there.
Yeah, that's exactly what I find. You know, like I love being around readers and writers, and it's so exciting. But as soon as it's over, it's like, you know, I'm ready to
just kind of
crash.
That's so funny. I'd annoy you guys like I annoy my wife, because I'm the one that gets out of the convention and I'm walking down and I'm like, who can I talk to next? And I pick up my phone and I call. So, you know, that's funny. And I can imagine that that's tough, but I think that's wonderful advice, because I know a lot of writers feel that way and they wonder, you know, how can I do this? You know, I like writing because it's a solo art form and I kind of do it off on the side. And so I think that's really great.
Well, one of the things that's kind of interesting to me is how you start off, you know, you were programming, then you moved into writing, and writing is how I first came to know you, because, you know, way back near the 20th century, there's this book, The Writer's Online Marketplace, which came out like January 2001, I believe. And at the time, like, you know, it had like the cool, like futuristic kind of graphics and stuff, which, you know, seem kind of outdated now. But at the time, I remember I was like, oh, the Writer's Market Online Marketplace looks awesome. and you know, and then you started doing some work, you know, for Brian. You did a lot of work for me on the writersmarket.com site, doing the Market Watch and stuff. And so, like, I knew you as a writer, but I also came to learn over time that you're doing these illustrations, these online comics, which, you know, are hilarious. If there are, like, a few people that, you know, I always recommend people follow online. And one of the reasons why I point people in your direction is because of these, like, you know, awesome, like, comics, you know. And you're such a great supporter of other writers and illustrators. I mean, you know, just... You know, you're always, you know, you're not just there for your own success. You're there to help other people up and to lift people up. But all of this to get to, I guess, you know, everyone knows you as an illustrator now. I first knew you as a writer. Were you doing both of those kind of at the same time, or did the illustration come after the writing, or did the writing come, you know, how did that work out?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I've, when I was little, I never imagined that I'd ever be a professional illustrator. My focus was always on writing. And not in terms of a career, I thought, like, nobody can make money in the arts. So, you know, and I grew up in a lower middle income family. So, and my marks were pretty good in school. So I had to, you know, of course I was going to pick a career that, you know, was secure and paid well. So that's why I picked computer science. Plus, I like programming. But I've always loved, you know, in retrospect, I've always loved art. I loved to draw since I was really little. I remember I got in trouble when I took crayons and when I drew on the walls and the furniture. And, you know, I was like 18. And, no, I was like I was 4 or 5 or something like that. And I've always loved comics. I think that's one of the themes that I've, that is carried through from childhood to adult. I've always loved comics, comic strips. I used to edit. See, I was an editor way back. I used to edit a publication called Family Weekly, Circulation 1. I was the editor. I recruited, you know, my sister and brother to contribute. And we would put it up in I put a clip on it and put it in the upstairs family washroom, because I knew that people would always go there and see it. So I've always loved art. But I've in my mind, though, I knew I eventually, even if I was a programmer full-time, I wanted to write novels. I've always considered myself from the beginning as a writer. Now, I think I honestly feel it's equal children's book writer and illustrator. I am going to get my novels published still, by the way. One of my goals, I'm saying this publicly, I am going to complete my middle grade novel this year. I'm working on a fourth one. As I mentioned before, first two did not sell. The third one I wrote, but I decided it wasn't strong enough to send out. I consider those first three novels learning novels. They are not wasted time. This fourth novel, even though I can't control when it will sell, I feel much more strongly about it. I will finish it. I'm telling you that. You feel free to nag me anytime. How's your middle grade novel going? Okay, but anyway, so I've always loved to write, and that's why after I quit the program, my computer programming job, I wanted to keep writing, and that's when I got into – I totally missed that whole section of my – you know, my career. I totally got into nonfiction writing, and that's how I met you, Robert. And also how, so many things I want to say, but we only have an hour. So yeah, so I totally got, plus I wanted to earn some money. And so even though nonfiction writing tends not to be as glamorous as novel writing, I found it really taught me a lot about the craft. And so while I was taking on all kinds of freelance work, like teaching piano and working in children's bookstore, I was also working on my short nonfiction, using the writer's market, of course, as, you know, inspiration about where to send my fiction, poetry, something, but also where to send my nonfiction. And I would write pretty much anything anyone would pay me for. And then came along the World Wide Web, and I launched my first website for writers. It began as for children's book writers, InkSpot, and then as it got more popular, I expanded it, and my community grew and grew. And that's actually when the people at Writer's Digest called me. I remember the editor, his name was David Frixell? Yes, I haven't met him in person. But he called me, and I remember, I'm glad I didn't hang up. I thought it was a practical joke at first. But he called me, and he said, he asked me if I'd consider writing the Writer's Online Marketplace. And I went, what? Because, you know, my goal had, up to that point, just been novel writing, but, you know, like publishing a nonfiction book. And I learned a lot in that process as well. So that's another piece of advice I would have had for my younger self, is not to be a snob about writing. Explore other types of genres and types. You can learn about your craft in so many different ways, and you never know what other opportunities are going to open up because of you exploring different kinds of writing.
That's great. I love your enthusiasm, and we know that you'll complete your novel this year.
Thank you. We're
confident. You don't have to sell us on it. So, anyway, this interview has been great, but now we're transitioning toward the end, and it's time for our 10-question blitz. Okay. These are a series of questions, some fun, some a little more serious, and hopefully we'll have a good time doing it. So, Debbie, are you ready for the 10-question blitz?
I think so.
Great. Here we go.
Number one.
If you weren't an illustrator, what do you think you'd be, or a writer, what do you think you'd be and why? Still programming or something else?
I think it would probably be something, if it wasn't writing or illustrating, I'd probably be doing something music related, because I love writing music and performing music with my music group, Urban Tapestry. So maybe I'd be one of those people who write songs for commercials and stuff like that.
That'd be
But
neat.
You wanted, I could go on and on, but you want really short answers. Blitz, right?
No, blitz. Although, quick follow up. Wait, do you play an instrument? And if so, which one?
Yes, I play instruments, but I play piano, I play flute, Celtic harp, tin whistle, guitar. I'm trying to teach myself ukulele, hand percussion. When I perform with my music group, who we have albums available, I've been on national radio. But I mainly like playing music with people rather than solo performing. I actually pursued my ARCT degree with the Royal Conservatory of Music for a while, thinking I'd maybe be a piano teacher. But see, I was embracing the arts completely.
Jeez, Robert, what doesn't Debbie do? She's amazing.
Oh. Exactly. Number two.
Not including your own books, of course. What illustrated book do you look at and think, wow, that's amazing artwork right there?
Oh, there's so many good books out. That's a really hard question. But some of my favorite illustrators include my sister, Ruth Owe, ruthowe.com. I love Peter Brown's work, Eliza Wheeler, Sophie Blackall, and John Klassen. But there's so many good children's picture books out there and illustrators out there? So that's a really hard question.
Number three.
In the relationship between illustrators and writers, what's the most important thing writers should keep in mind?
If you're a writer that's working on a picture book manuscript, it's so important to leave room for the illustrator. You have to trust the illustrator. Do not try to micromanage them. That's probably my main piece of advice for writers.
And the follow-up.
Number four.
What's the most important thing illustrators should keep in mind?
Illustrators. I think if you're an aspiring picture book illustrator, I would strongly recommend reading a lot of picture books that you enjoy, just to analyze pacing and page turns and reader experience, because I've noticed a lot of picture book illustrators have the same mistaken assumption as new writers, in that picture book illustrators are just illustrating what's in the picture book text. But there's so much more. And I would also, I recommend for both writers and illustrators to check out the Children's Writers and Illustrators Market, of course. There's so many good articles in there as well. And also a blog that I'm actually involved with called KidLitArtist.com, which is the blog of the SCBW and mentees. I was chosen for the mentee program. And we have a lot of great advice for aspiring picture book writers and illustrators.
Number five.
Is there a celebrity who you'd like to collaborate with, and why?
You know what? I'll relate it again to what we said earlier. It's not so much the celebrities, is because I only want to illustrate picture book stories I love, whether or not they're celebrities. So if they can write and their stories appeal to me, I'll illustrate them. In terms of, you know, celebrities I know, Michael Ian Black, I know I've illustrated one of any. If he writes any more books picture books, I really, really, really want to illustrate them.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Good
answer.
I know I keep going on,
but I think there are celebrities out there I love in their movies or in TV shows or whatever, and musicians, but if their picture book texts aren't that great, I think it would hurt my career to illustrate them. So it has to be a good story.
Well, based on the track record so far, I'm certainly hoping that Michael Ian Black and you continue to create great books. So.
Oh, me too.
Number six.
What is it like working with our celebrity, Robert Lee Brewer?
Oh, wow. That's a whole nother kettle. No. I love working with Robert because he never tried to micromanage me. He had a great sense of humor, great communicator. He's here listening to me, so what else can I say? No. No, honestly, it was really hard, Robert, I have to say, it was really hard for me to pull out of working for writersmarket.com so I could pursue my children's book career, because I had so much fun with you. It wasn't so much the work, but I really enjoyed working with you.
Yeah, I remember when that happened, and I remember being bummed that you were going to be leaving, but I was so excited for you that you'd gotten to this point where you're going for it. And, that's part of what we're always trying to do, is like see people find success. And I'm just going to take this moment right now to say that, social media is such a big thing. And the whole reason I'm on Facebook is because Debbie pointed me that direction.
Oh, yay.
So whenever I talk about, people trying new stuff, I always like point to, Debbie is the person that got me on Facebook, and I've made so many connections after that. So thank you.
I appreciate you saying that.
Completely changed your life. Yeah, when you had to pull out from doing the writer's market stuff, I had to take Robert out and put my arm around him. He had the tears coming down and console him. So, but he was happy for you. They were happy tears too. So.
Number seven.
I've read that in your spare time, you're big into playing board games.
Oh, I love board games.
And are even involved in a board gaming community. What are your favorite board games to play?
Mainly because of my husband. I discovered a website and community called Board Game Geek. And I've gone to their conventions. And, there's so many good board games. And it depends on what your taste. Okay, my favorite board game ever is actually Arkham Horror, but it's not for everybody. You have to be into a little bit of role playing, and the game can last up to 6 or 7 hours. But my husband and I recently discovered a book called, a board game called Above and Below by Ryan Locat. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name right. And I love it because it's about exploring and creating and telling stories. And I discovered that at a board game convention through Board Game Geek. But I have also found that the games I enjoy depend a lot on the people I play with. I would much rather play a game that, you know, is, you know, cheesy and poorly rated, but with people that are like-minded, you know, not really, you know, super, like, overly focused on winning, but more about having a good time, than playing a great, highly recommended hot game with people I don't enjoy playing games with. So so much of board gaming for me is about it's a social aspect, who you're playing with. But I strongly recommend, if you like board games, to check out that community, Board Game Geek, at boardgamegeek.com, because you will find a fantastic community. You can get advice on, you know, any kind of games, and also find out more about the type of games that you want to play.
Robert, what kind of board games do you like?
You mean besides Yahtzee?
Yeah.
I'm with Debbie. Basically, it's who I'm playing with. You know, last night I was having fun just playing solitaire with my 12-year-old who is at that age where he doesn't usually want to hang out at all. So he wanted to do solitaire, and just sitting there playing solitaire next to him was a great experience. So, it's about who you're doing it with and how it's going.
Very cool. I agree. 90% of my time I'm playing Candyland at this point. So trying to introduce it. We're doing some card games now, and that's been a lot of fun as well.
Number 8.
What's the worst project you've ever worked on and why? And you don't have to name names, but we certainly encourage it.
All right. The worst project was a freelance illustration project I did right before I switched to full-time children's book illustration writing. And that was from a woman who will go unnamed. And she's a very nice woman, but she approached me and she said that she loved me to, you know, do an illustration for her website. And she loved my illustration style. She wasn't that picky. But she ended up, again, it's that I'm not good with micromanaging. She ended up wanting a zillion changes. Like, can you change the angle of that person's elbow 3 degrees? And it just went on and on and on. But that was a really good lesson for me, that that even if a person comes to me and says, oh, can you just whip off an illustration and I'll be happy with anything, you know, it's never the case. But that's human nature. I'm not saying anything was wrong with her, because, you know, that is human nature. But it's one reason it's so important to have a contract. Really important to know, as a freelance writer or illustrator, what you're getting into, even if it's a very informal sort of friendly, you know, agreement.
Sure. It sounds like it'd be great to be on the same page early on.
Yes,
for those kind
exactly. Exactly.
Number 9.
What's the one book you think everyone should read?
That is an impossible question, you realize. But one book I would strongly recommend, actually two books for aspiring writers and illustrators. One is, of course, The Writer's Market, which even though I know – are you the editor still, Robert?
Yes.
Well, even if you weren't the editor, I would still recommend that, because I have found that and the Children's Writers and Illustrators Market really excellent in terms of the content, the useful articles. There's interviews. Like, for example, I was looking at the Children's Writers and Illustrators Market, had interviews with successful authors and illustrators. It spotlighted new illiterate agents. And the articles in it were entertaining, and it's so much – is packed with information. So I strongly recommend, you know, aspiring writers and illustrators to check those two books out.
Good recommendations. I think both those books too really are, especially when you're trying to break in and you don't know where to go, they are wonderful launching pads full of a wealth of information and telling you what to do and where to do it. And I think that that's what's so great about those books.
Yeah, excellent.
Number 10.
What's your best advice for anyone considering or in the early stages of a career as a writer and or illustrator?
I would say my strongest piece of advice would be to try not to take things personally. There's so much about this industry that seems personal, but it's really not. So if you are being rejected, if you receive a rejection for a manuscript, try not to think, oh, I suck, the editor hates me, it's because this editor, no, just move on, you know, keep working on more things, persevere. A lot of what I have found that sometimes an editor or an agent will reject your work, not because of the work, but it just came to them at the wrong time. Maybe they were in a crabby mood, or they just received something that was like yours, or there could be so many other reasons. So try not to take things personally. Also, after you're published, you know, in terms of reviews or what people, and I'm still learning this myself, try not to take things personally. In order to survive long term in this industry, you have to try to develop a thick skin and try to not assume the worst about people. That's what I found has really helped me.
Awesome. Great answers. Quickly, can you tell people who maybe want to learn more or connect with you? Can you tell us where they can find you on Twitter again?
Inky Elbows, at Inky Elbows. That's my main. You can find, you know, links to most of my projects from the link I have at Inky Elbows. I hope to see you there. Please come by and say hi.
Well, thank you so much, Debbie. You were wonderful. This was a lot of fun.
I had so much fun. I was so nervous, but I really appreciate how nice you guys are.
I think you were nervous. We were nervous. You're the celebrity, we think. So.
Oh, yeah, right.
Anyway, well, thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Wow, so that was a great interview with Debbie. She's so excited that it got me excited.
Yeah, me too. She's so fun to talk to. In fact, one of the takeaways I had from the entire interview was strictly about her personality and how energetic she was. And I think that's a key thing that writers should always know is when discussing your work and discussing what you do, always be enthusiastic. One thing that not only impressed me but also made this interview so much fun, and one of my favorite interviews that we've done so far, is how excited she was when talking about every one of her projects, from working with Michael Ian Black to the Judy Blume series to her own books and more. Her excitement made me extra excited about her work. And I think that excitement always comes through when you're talking to anybody, whether that's an agent or an editor, about what you're trying to sell, your book, your manuscript, or whether that's an audience that you're trying to get to buy your book. So I think that enthusiasm is contagious. You have to keep in mind the publishing process can wear on you sometimes because of rejection and other things and the slowness in certain times. But always remember how exciting it is to have your book published, and don't be afraid to let that excitement show. Another key point that she made that I thought was really important was put yourself in a position to succeed. It just takes one good break, the right person at the right time noticing you. Debbie pointed out a quote from her friend. I can't remember what she said her friend's name was, but her friend said, "While you can't control when lightning will hit, you can improve your own personal lightning rod all the time." And just as important, always be ready when lightning hits, so that way you can take full advantage of it. And by being prepared and ready, you'll always be in good shape when lightning does strike.
Yeah, and I thought those are great points. And kind of going off of that was Debbie's point about, you know, being open to what you might be able to accomplish. You know, don't assume where you are is where you're meant to be. You know, be willing to take those risks. I think, you know, Debbie has shown that she was able to take those risks. She left freelancing life behind to follow her real dream, which was writing children's books and illustrating children's books. She also mentioned you know, to trust the process. This was specifically, I believe, with the children's books, is, you know, trust the publishing process. Let people do their jobs the way that they're supposed to do their jobs. Don't try to micromanage the process. In her case, as an illustrator, she doesn't try to tell the writers what to do on her books. She trusts them to do their job as far as writing the script. And she expects them to trust her to take the script and illustrate it the way that needs to be illustrated. And, you know, the same thing would be hold true when you're dealing with your editor or your agent. Trust them to know what their job is and let them do their job. And, you know, of course, offer to help as much as possible, but don't try to micromanage the project. And then the final thing was just perseverance. And, you know, I thought about Debbie's story about with the SCBWI contest and how it was rejected because of like a technicality or whatever. And she had the quote, you know, I can't even pay to be rejected. And at times it might feel like the only thing that's happening is rejection. But persevere through that. Debbie, like all writers, started off with a lot of rejection. When I started writing, started off with a lot of rejection. I think all writers can point to that. But you persevere through that, and you can, you know, keep that excitement up to get all the way through to the finish line.
I can't even pay to be rejected. It's such a good quote. I love it. Anyway, I want to thank Debbie for coming on the program and talking about her career path as a writer and illustrator. Honestly, that was just so much fun. I think Robert would agree. From Robert Lee Brewer and me, Brian A. Clems, thanks for listening to the Writer's Market Podcast. Come visit us at writersmarket.com and writersdigest.com. And don't forget to stop back next time for more great publishing advice. Until next time, take care of yourself and your writing.